This is Bill Kopp. I'm an Asheville-based author and music journalist. At the start of our conversation, David Gilmour makes it plain that he prefers to focus on the music he's making today. And that's fair enough. Save for the one-off 23-minute Live 8 reunion in 2005, the last time Pink Floyd played in front of an audience was October 1994. In the years since, guitarist and singer Gilmour has released two well-regarded studio albums, 2006's On an Island and Rattle That Lock from 2015, and a pair of live albums. He has lent his signature guitar work to recordings by Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, Donovan, and Roxy Music's Phil Manzanera, and Brian Ferry. He's collaborated with electronic duo The Orb. On world tours in 2006 and 2015, Gilmour played a combined 80-plus performances. Those dates featured some classic Pink Floyd material, but he has long been more interested in creating new music rather than basking in the glories of days long gone by. Gilmour's fifth and latest studio album is Luck and Strange, released worldwide September 6th. I spoke with David Gilmour about the new album, his creative process, and how making music is different than the old days for him. This interview was conducted for Spin magazine, and Spin holds the copyright for the interview. I'd like to thank my editors at Spin, Liza Lentini and Bob Guccione Jr., for giving permission to share an edited version of our conversation with Asheville FM and its listeners. The lyrics to your songs are very accessible, but from my perspective, in a remarkably different manner than what a lot of people might think of as Pink Floyd lyrics. There's an emotional warmth and vulnerability in Polly's lyrics that I think wasn't always present in Pink Floyd's material. Would you agree? And has that been a deliberate choice that the two of you have made?
I suppose I'd have to say that lockdown, COVID, has been an influence on all of this stuff. At the beginning of COVID, we were thinking that, this was going to wipe out a load of people. You know, so we thought it was much more dangerous than it's actually turned out to be, and particularly for the elderly and infirm like me. And it turned out not to be. Anyway, that we locked down, we were there with the topic of mortality, of these pandemics. Maybe there'll be more of them. With things that we discussed, and all these things sort of have an influence on the way Polly's writing of the lyrics came out. She has what I think is a remarkable ability to get inside the brains of people, me in particular, and be able to write from her own perspective, but have it sort of more universal, so it can be like something that I could have, would have said, because I'm singing her words. I mean, I'm obviously used to singing other people's words at various times.
Tell me about the mechanics of your songwriting collaboration with Polly. Is there give and take back and forth, or is it more kind of a Elton and Bernie sort of thing where it's like, here's the words, set them to music?
Well, it's the other way around with us usually. The music comes first. Polly, in all our time listening, we go on car journeys and listen to the songs that I'm working on, the material, the music. And she will usually say, oh, maybe give me that one on my headphones and I'll go for a walk. And she tends to go for long walks and inhabit a piece of music until it reveals itself to her. She will write some words and we will listen to them through. And I very rarely have any issue with any of it. Then occasionally there's a word that I find uncomfortable to sing, but generally speaking, it's just the process, which is really her knowing what she wants to say, but also that it's stuff that I would want to be saying too.
How do you think that your approach to songwriting has changed over the years?
I'm not sure that it has very much. I just hope that moments of inspiration will reveal themselves to me, which I can then work on. I have a home studio, Pro Tools recording system, and that has changed the way I do things because I can give full rein to all my silly obsessions about how things could be or should be, whereas there was a time when you pretty much had to strum it on a guitar or it wasn't going to exist. So there are differences.
Do you tend to write as you go along and then at a certain point decide to make an album and then get more serious and structured about it? Or do you start with a decision to make an album and then begin the writing process?
Well, I write all the time. I'm working on pieces of music. There are pieces of music on this album that had in their birth state. Some pieces go back as far as 1997. The track "Luck and Strange" itself is basically a recording we did in 2007 with Rick Wright. Some of them are brand new. But as you said, your first description of how the process is closest to the one where I just am constantly working a bit, but often without the focus of a body of work. I'm just focusing on one piece of work, one song, one tune. And then there does come a point when it feels like this is the button pressing moment, and this is the moment we're going to actually start making a plan, getting people, studios, musicians, thinking about the whole process and what we're trying to achieve. And that comes at a certain point, and that came with us a year or so ago. We've actually progressed it pretty swiftly since then. Last year we did hide ourselves away in a little place in London with a studio room and a sort of room with a desk in it, and Polly and I actually was sitting there for a few months, more or less 9 to 5, 5 days a week, trying to move these half-formed ideas into something more substantial.
Is there ever a case that you work on a piece that you think is going to be on an album and get to a certain point and think, I really like this, but I somehow think that its character isn't consistent with the album overall? And if that does happen, what happens to that song?
Well, I think that I ever think, is this consistent with whatever album I'm working on? I always find that they will fall into their position anyway. But there are songs that I work on, but they're not going to be that developed before they might be set aside for a future time. I mean, I have many other songs that are quite well formed, actually, not quite ready or haven't quite made it onto this one. I mean, The Piper's Call was probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe even more. The song Sings, for example, I think that is probably 10 years old, but the chorus is from 1997. Got my son Joe singing on it, going "Sing, Daddy, sing," and that was recorded on a mini disc player in 1997. He's now nearly 30.
Something that I've noticed about your approach to writing, and here I'm thinking more of the musical side than lyrically, is that if you have a good idea and maybe the way that it comes out is not completely fully realized the way that you might have, as opposed to abandoning it, you'll stick with it and try it again. Do you buy that argument?
Atom Heart Mother, I came into the room with the main theme, that thing. I remember having that. That's where it all started, with that main theme, and everyone joining in playing that, and weeks of developing it and moving it and adding pieces and taking away pieces and stuff. I don't have so many moments now when I am doing that in a room with a bunch of people throwing ideas around. The track "Luck and Strange" from my barn jams in 2007, that
Right.
comes out of a system a bit like that. But that was more to do with the band I had had on an island tour being very on it and hot by the end of that tour. We were playing together so well, that I thought we should just get in a room together and jam and see what happened. And so we did a lot of things that day. I must listen to them through again. The first one we did became "Luck and Strange."
If a person listens to one of your albums and finds that it is very musically eclectic, that was not intentional on your part.
It's a function of the moment. No, I'm not. I would never try to be eclectic. There are, I think, on nearly every album I've done, I've been a part of, I have invented some new thing in terms of sound and technology that has not been discovered before, like On the Run from Dark Side, and all sorts of other things, the sort of delay guitar things that I've done. I think still that happens, but I'm never searching for them. They're things that just sort of assert themselves onto you, and you say thank you and move it on.
But you've clearly been supportive and encouraging in your children's creative pursuits. They could and have gone in directions that are very different from your own. How gratifying is it to have Charlie and Romany's enthusiastic involvement and Joe's sort of maybe slightly passive involvement, since that's an old recording? What does that mean to you to have them involved with this project?
Well, one worries a little bit about has nepotism gone too far? I've seen moments in the past where people in my business have brought a child or a grown-up-ish child onto the stage with them, and I've always frankly slightly dreaded it and thought, but and I won't name names, but Romany, when we were doing our live stream things, and when we did the song Yes, I Have Ghosts, showed that she and I have a blend that is worth more than any other thing. One of the things of feeling freer, more liberated to just be as selfish as I want to be with whatever I want to do, has made itself apparent on with her singing. Her singing with me, I think, has something magical, and her voice on its own as the lead voice on Between Two Points, it makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I think it's brilliant, and so I can now, as me, as David Gilmour, I can do cover of a song by someone else and have a daughter of mine sing it. I can do that. That is a freedom that I relish.
How are you going to tackle that song on the live dates?
Well, I suspect that Romany will come along and sing it. She's in the middle of a university course, so
Right.
she may not be able to do every date, but I suspect I'll find that I'll have to have her put in handcuffs and taken off somewhere to have her not turn up and do it. And she'll be great. I hope she'll do all of them if she can.
Thank you for talking with me, but thank you most of all for the music.
My pleasure.
Once again, I'm Bill Kopp, an Asheville-based author and music journalist. You can find more than 1,000 of my artist interviews online in written form by visiting musoscribe.com.